From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Black and brown communities across the United States overwhelmingly showed up to the polls before and during the November 3rd presidential race, braving the pandemic to deliver a victory to Democrat Joe Biden. Now, President-elect Biden is picking one diverse figure after another for his cabinet positions. When anti-war activists didn't like his hawkish pick of Michelle Flournoy to head the Defense Department, he pivoted to African-American retired General Lloyd Austin. But rather than represent people of color and women in identity only, how is Biden choosing to reflect, or not, the progressive politics that will address systemic racism and sexism and economic injustice? My guest is K. Sabeel Rahman, president of DEMOS, associate professor of law at Brooklyn Law School, where he teaches constitutional law, administrative law, and courses on law and inequality. He is the author of Democracy Against Domination and Civic Power, Rebuilding American Democracy in an Era of Crisis. His latest article in DEMOS reflects on the influence that voters of color can have on the incoming Biden administration. Welcome to the program, Sabeel.
Thanks so much for having me.
So first, what have you made of the moves that the incoming Biden administration, President-elect Biden, has made in his cabinet picks? Because often for incoming administrations, who they start to name to critically important positions reflects the kind of president they're going to be.
It's such an important question. And first, I just want to say that the centrality of Black and brown voters in the November election is so important to setting the agenda for what needs to happen next, right? This the Biden presidency has been powered and delivered by the sheer efforts and tremendous energies of Black, brown, indigenous, working class voters who showed up for his ticket. And I think with these appointments, what we're seeing is an attempt by the new administration to respond to these key urgent crises. He's named it from his very first acceptance speech, these crises of the COVID crisis, the economic crisis, the crisis of racial injustice, and the crisis of climate. And so I think what you're seeing is an attempt to speak to those. Some of these first steps have been encouraging, right? I think there's still more to do, more left to be that hasn't been determined yet. So I don't want to declare a victory on any of these things yet, but I think it's a good sign to see that the new administration is taking these crises and the importance of Black and brown communities seriously.
Do you worry that concerns of Black and brown Americans will be reflected simply in identity politics? I mean, as a South Asian, of course, seeing someone like Kamala Harris as a vice presidential pick is certainly important, but her values are more important than what she looks like or where she's from.
Yeah, it's a really important point, Sonali. I think the picks and the identities of the people who are being picked is certainly important, but I think what's even more important is the lived experience and then the policy priorities.
Right? I mean, we remember George W. Bush coming in as a Republican right-wing president, bringing in Black and brown figures into his cabinet, who basically put Black and brown names and faces to right-wing Republican policies.
Right, and I think the proof will ultimately be in the policies that come out of the new administration. So, these are some encouraging early signs, but I would really want to hold judgment, right, until we see that what are they actually prioritizing in their first day, first 100 days? Are they pursuing policies that are actually advancing racial equity, dealing with our economic crisis, taking the deep inequities of our society seriously.
So let's talk about economic justice issues. So important at this time. We're seeing Congress right now flounder over COVID relief bill. It should have been a no-brainer to say, yes, of course, Unemployed Americans who've lost their jobs because of the pandemic should get unemployment benefits until the system is restored. Yes, of course, Americans should get a second round of stimulus checks. Instead, we're seeing especially the Republican Party hem and haw and back away from giving Americans simple relief, even while they have no problem coming together with Democrats to fully fund the Defense Department.
Yeah, I mean, it's so shameful and immoral, right, on the part of the Congress to, and particularly the on the part of the GOP leadership in the Senate to hold up this type of critical aid for people who are deeply struggling. We have tens of millions of Americans who, because of the COVID crisis and the economic collapse, are facing food insecurity. Many of them are at risk of eviction. We have people who are driving up the, you know, credit card debt just to pay the utility bills, right? These are, this is an urgent crisis, in some ways deeper even than the Great Depression right now. And we have a Congress that has decided to let people suffer on their own. That has to change. And I think a worry or a danger for the new administration is, you know, unless things change in the Senate runoff races in Georgia, it's possible that the GOP Senate could continue to keep things held up, right? And in terms of big new legislation. And so how can the new administration move creatively to speak to the crises that are happening?
And of course, again, it will be largely Black and brown voters in Georgia who will determine the makeup, or rather the control of the U.S. Senate with the two races in January. It was Black and brown voters in Georgia that flipped that state from Trump to Biden, something that Trump has had a very hard time accepting. And there have been so many concerted efforts to overturn the democratic will of the people. I mean, there have basically been figures and Trump backers who have tried very hard to invalidate the votes of voters of color. Again, we are now going to be relying on those same voters to brave not just the pandemic, but the cold weather and the election fatigue that they're experiencing to do the country a favor when it comes to the Senate. So here you have this Congress that is having a hard time coming to an agreement, largely because of Republican intransigence. This is going to be likely more of what Biden faces when he comes into office. Even if the Democrats win the two Senate seats in Georgia, it will be the slimmest of majorities, something that could unfortunately empower the moderates or rightward-leaning Democrats in the Senate, right?
Yeah, I think legislation will be challenging to pass even with a 50-50 Senate. And I think this is where one thing I'm encouraged by is that the president-elect has been very consistent in his own conversations and speeches about the critical importance of delivering on these crises, right? Responding to COVID, the economy, to racial injustice, and to climate. So I think that's helpful. What I hope is that that urgency or that clarity of priorities really then translates into legislation that is being put forth and executive actions, regulatory actions that the new White House, the new administration can take in its own, using its own authorities to really, this is such a crisis moment. I think we really have to pull out all the stops.
Let's talk about some of the pieces of legislation that you suggest the Biden administration could tackle, that could be pressured into tackling. One of them is the issue of D.C. statehood for Washington, D.C. You know, I'm here in Southern California. Why should Californians care about D.C. becoming a state? Why is that an important issue?
So one of the reasons why we have this deep crisis and the lack of an aggressive response from the Congress is actually because our democracy is broken. Right? We talked about how Black and brown voters overcame these enormous barriers to show up in November and to keep showing up. You know, it shouldn't take that level of effort and that level of personal risk and danger just to participate in our democracy. And so these are deeper structural failures that need to be addressed by legislation. One piece is remedying the imbalance in our electoral college and in the Senate. We have a constitutional system where a relatively small minority of the population commands outsized influence on the electoral college and the Senate because of how our population is distributed. And that particularly dilutes the political power of Black and brown voters in particular. Adding, D.C., is a city that does not have literal representation in Congress or in the Electoral College, and that needs to change in its own right. But it's also a way of actually moving the Senate to be more representative and reflective of our country as a whole.
There's also the importance of the Voting Rights Act list. We think that we've dealt with the issue of voting rights. We know that the Supreme Court weakened that incredibly. We've seen state-level attacks on the rights of people and the ability of communities of color to vote just because the 2020 election did end up running relatively smoothly doesn't necessarily mean that voting rights are a done deal in this country, right? I mean, the election ran smoothly in spite of relentless attacks on voting rights of people of color. So let's talk about what an incoming Biden administration could do, along with Congress, of course, on the issue of voting rights.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly right. And I really think it's important for people to understand that the successes of election administration in November were, it's a real success, and it was a success despite significant efforts to suppress voters and really to skew the election results away from working class and particularly Black and brown voters. So there are a couple of things that I hope the new administration will prioritize. First, it's critical that they throw their weight behind the For the People Act in the Congress, also sometimes called HR1, which is a really transformative omnibus voting rights bill that would modernize voter registration, protect voters.
That's the For the People Act.
Exactly, the For the People Act. It was passed by the House already. It has not yet been passed by the Senate. And so depending on what happens in Georgia, again, but that's a bill that would be really critical to safeguard the ballot and safeguard our democracy. I think there are also things that the Biden administration can do through its federal agencies. So for example, Biden can direct federal agencies by executive order to provide voter registration services. We have about 76 million eligible Americans who are unregistered to vote as of 2018. But you could have federal agencies, VA offices, naturalization ceremonies, anytime that some of these unregistered voters engage with the federal government, those could be spaces for actually then registering those voters, which would really go a long way. The third thing that we've proposed is for Biden to create a specific office of democracy and civic innovation within the White House. It's a strange thing that as critical as our democracy is, there is no specific office in the executive branch dedicated to democracy reform. We have the civil rights enforcement divisions of the DOJ, which are critical, but even beyond enforcing the existing civil rights laws and voting rights laws, I think it would be really important for the new administration to have a point person for advancing democracy reform overall.
What do you make of the issue of healthcare and Biden? This is such a huge issue. Americans have, especially in recent years, expressed that healthcare is one of their top concerns. Now we're in the middle of a pandemic. The fact that we don't have a national universal, publicly funded system of healthcare is a massive liability, not just when it comes to dealing with filling hospital beds, but the distribution of a vaccine. I mean, we look jealously at the UK, whose national healthcare system didn't just take on the COVID crisis more smoothly than we've been able to do, but they're now rolling out a nationwide inoculation using the national healthcare system. We don't have that. Biden is one of the biggest foes of a Medicare for all system, maybe because his administration that he was part of with Obama invested so much in the Affordable Care Act that he sees, even Medicare for all as somehow an attack on Obamacare. He said many months ago that he would veto a Medicare for All bill if it came to his desk as president. I'm not sure if he's been asked that question in recent months. I wish he would. But shouldn't he take on the issue of Medicare for All and start championing it?
Yeah, so there's a lot that needs to happen on healthcare. I think there are two big challenges that you just articulated. One is about how do we create a system where everybody has access to healthcare as a human right? Especially in the middle of a pandemic, but really true, it was true even before COVID hit, that this was a thing that we needed. The second thing is, how do we then also rapidly create the infrastructure needed to deliver a critical life-saving and economy-saving vaccine quickly, and particularly to the communities that are most vulnerable, right? Elderly folks, Black and brown communities have had particularly high COVID infection and mortality rates. So those are two related problems, but they're distinct problems. I think, on the access point, I hope that the administration is thinking creatively about how we can move to a more universal form of healthcare access. We've had tens of millions of people who have lost access to healthcare because of lost jobs and so on. And it just shows the leakiness of the existing Affordable Care Act system, that it needs to be significantly fixed, and we need more kind of universal options that everyone can enroll in. On the vaccine point, I think some of the new administration, the transition team's public statements, right? They released their healthcare plan, their healthcare team, right? Who the president-elect will be leaning on for managing the COVID crisis. I saw that as an encouraging sign. There are a number of really tremendous public health experts, folks who are well-versed in these questions of not just healthcare infrastructure, but also equity in healthcare. And so that makes me encouraged or hopeful that the administration will be prioritizing this need to focus on healthcare, but also to focus on the equity and access to healthcare.
Are you also hopeful that the incoming Biden administration could tackle the issue of criminal justice reform? We saw some moves toward that during the Obama administration through the Justice Department, in as much as the federal government can sort of hold local police departments accountable through the Justice Department. Those baby steps were, of course, promptly undone by Jeff Sessions, the incoming Justice Department head, Attorney General, rather, under Trump. And now we've seen the Trump administration, especially under William Barr, taking the so-called tough on crime approach, which simply means criminalizing communities of color. Then, of course, it's so disappointing to see someone like former President Obama denounce the important slogan that groups like Black Lives Matter have been putting out, such as defund the police, instead of reflecting back the notion that we do need to move funding away from police departments towards social services. And I'm wondering what you think communities of color, especially considering the summer uprising that we saw around racist police brutality, what communities of color can demand from Biden on the issue of criminal justice reform as it pertains to race in particular?
Yeah, this is going to be one of those really critical issue areas that I think a lot of folks will be watching the new administration to see, what they deliver on. There are a couple things that stand out as concrete things that I hope the new administration will consider and move forward. So one, as you mentioned, the Department of Justice, that cabinet pick will be extraordinarily important to have someone who can restart and really push the envelope on, for example, the kind of pattern and practice investigations that the DOJ is empowered to do, to have some accountability on police departments. It'll be really important too to see that if the new administration is actually redirecting resources into the kind of social, public health, economic infrastructure, right? That is, right now we have a vastly overfunded military and criminal justice system and a vastly underfunded public system of education, healthcare, social services, right? A lot of that is state and local policy, but the new administration could do a lot to change those resource allocations to, put our dollars where it'll actually help support Black and brown communities to ensure security and safety. So there are things that would be good indicators of progress being made. But I think this is one area too where it's important that we understand the push for structural systemic racial justice or against systemic injustice is not just about the police reform ideas. It's really across the board. And so the conversation we're having about centering Black and brown communities in the economy, in the COVID crisis, and then in dismantling the system of police violence that falls on Black and brown communities, all of those are related, right? All of those need to be addressed at the same time. And so I do hope that one takeaway from the summer uprisings is that the new administration hopefully will approach these issues on all fronts. The only other thing that I'd mention too here is that I think there's a good case to be made that it was the grassroots organizing and protesting and mobilizing that people did in the summer that really helped power this victory for Joe Biden in November.
Absolutely. Right. There were a lot of voter registration booths at protest sites.
Exactly. And if you look at the voter registration numbers, you know, one of the things, you know, we do a lot of work on voting rights in our organization at Demos. And when the pandemic hit, one of the things that we were really concerned about is the combination of voter suppression and a deadly pandemic could really destroy, crater voter registrations and the ability of Black and brown voters to show up. And what you saw is that voter registrations were in fact collapsing until the uprisings, right, after George Floyd's murder, when you see that tremendous energy and engagement really did drive a huge increase in voter registrations among voters who ultimately were critical to the victory in November.
Well, Sabil, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll link to your article in Demos from our website. Thanks.
Thanks so much for having me.
My guest has been K. Sabil Rahman, president of Demos, associate professor of law at Brooklyn Law School, where he teaches constitutional law, administrative law, and courses on law and inequality. His books include Democracy Against Domination and Civic Power, Rebuilding American Democracy in an Era of Crisis. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.